evidence at trial showed that Senator Stevens committed this crime to hide from the public and from his constituents the fact that he had received hundreds of thousands of dollars of freebies.
Senator Ted Stevens is found guilty on all seven counts. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, the 27th of October. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, mixed reaction from around the state.
I say that he shouldn't have been, and he's a good man.
I was unimpressed by his arguments that he was innocent, and I think that obviously the jury agreed.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If heating your home costs more than you can manage and you have a low income, the state of Alaska has heating assistance programs that may help. The programs have expanded to include families with a higher household income. For information or an application form, call 1-800-470-3058 or visit heatinghelp.alaska.gov. Sometimes a little help makes all the difference. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Alaska's senior senator has been found guilty on all seven counts of lying on his financial disclosure forms. A Washington, D.C. jury convicted Senator Ted Stevens this afternoon on all charges. The first says Stevens schemed to conceal gifts on his disclosure forms. The rest of the counts break down the charges by year, starting with Stevens' 2001 form. The jury of eight women and four men arrived at their verdict after less than 3 days of deliberations. There was silence in the packed courtroom as the jury foreman read their verdict, saying guilty on each count. Stevens left the courthouse without speaking to reporters, but issued a written statement just 2 hours later, saying he is innocent and plans to keep fighting. He is still running for re-election next week, and said in a statement that he plans to return to Alaska on Wednesday to campaign. Stevens said he's disappointed by the verdict, but not surprised, given the, quote, repeated instances of prosecutorial misconduct in this case. Prosecutors did have some close calls when they were admonished by Judge Emmett Sullivan for withholding evidence and information about a possible witness, but the judge penalized them by throwing out some evidence and testimony and decided to move forward. Stevens claims in today's statement that the prosecutors, quote, allowed evidence to be introduced that they knew was false. The Justice Department's case against Stevens is part of a massive 4-year investigation into corruption in Alaska state politics. Senator Stevens' conviction is by far the highest profile one that the government has netted. Matt Friedrich, the acting Assistant Attorney General for the Justice Department's Criminal Division, said today that prosecutors proved beyond a reasonable doubt that Stevens knowingly filed false financial disclosure forms over 6 years.
The evidence at trial showed that Senator Stevens committed this crime to hide from the public and from his constituents the fact that he had received hundreds of thousands of dollars of freebies from an Alaska corporation and its chief executive officer.
Despite Stevens' claims that prosecutors acted in a, quote, unconscionable manner, Friedrich counted today's sweeping convictions as a win for the Justice Department.
This has been a long and hard-fought trial. The department is proud of this team, not only for this trial, but for the investigation which led to it. This investigation continues, as does our commitment to holding elected officials accountable when they violate our laws.
Stevens is only the fifth sitting senator ever convicted of a crime. His name will still appear on next week's ballot. If he's reelected, it would be up to the Senate to unseat him. Stevens will likely appeal today's decision. His lawyers have until early December to file any motions. Judge Sullivan said he'll wait to assign a sentencing date until February, when Stevens' lawyers and prosecutors will meet again at a motions hearing. APRN's Libby Casey was in the courtroom today when the verdict was read. She joins us now. Libby, can you set the scene from this afternoon? Did you know a verdict was imminent?
No, we didn't. We knew the jury had a note. They've had about 7 notes throughout the trial asking for more details or clarification or complaining about each other, but this note seemed different. The court staff was running around and telling us, you really should be there. We figured that the verdict may not come today, however, because an alternate just joined the jury this morning. But of course, no one was wandering too far away from the courthouse just in case. And as the crowds gathered and Stevens' family arrived and they set out a microphone for the juror foreman to speak into, we realized it was time for a verdict.
What was the courtroom itself like? Was it packed?
It was absolutely packed with Senator Stevens' staffers, reporters, lawyers curious about the case, and we were all waiting to find out what the jury had decided, waiting for these 12 men and women to come in and essentially seal Stevens' fate.
Libby, how did the jury deliver the verdict itself, and what was the reaction?
Well, we were all watching them as they filed into the courtroom, you know, looking for signs. Were they looking at Stevens? Were they looking away? I saw a couple of glances at him, so I didn't really have an indication of what their verdict would be before they read it. And a couple did actually seem a little bit upbeat, not with big smiles on their faces, but not downcast and sort of angst-ridden. So I wasn't sure where they were going to go. The judge read their verdict in a sealed note and then handed it back to them and said, you know, on the first count, how do you find? And they said, guilty. And that was sort of like the big moment, because the first count was really the biggest. That was the one that asked, did Senator Stevens scheme to conceal these gifts? The rest of the counts went through the various years. So when they said that count won, it was like, you know, this has really happened. Senator Stevens slumped slightly, and I was looking at some of his staffers who looked just sick. I mean, one of them was just shaking his head and pursing his lips. Stevens' lawyer, Brendan Sullivan, was shaking his head no. But the jury went through each of the rest of the counts. The judge asked the foreman, how do you find on count two? And he said guilty. And they went all the way through each of the seven counts. Stevens' lawyers asked afterwards that each juror be polled to ask for his or her personal verdict. And each said, yes, I agree, I agree, I agree, all right through the 12 of them. And then it was sort of a stunned silence at first. There wasn't like a vocal reaction at all. It was just quiet.
And what happened after the verdict was read? Did Senator Stevens make any comments, or did he leave right away?
He didn't comment to reporters, but as he was leaving the courtroom, my colleague Rich Maurer at the Anchorage Daily News heard Stevens saying to his wife, it's not over yet. And she said, boy, you've got that right. And he repeated again, it's not over yet. And the rest of us were waiting right outside, sort of walked out the courtroom right before him to see if he would say anything as he went into the hall and then exited the building. And he did not. He left the courthouse and went right to a white van. He was surrounded as soon as he left the building by a throng of reporters and cameramen and photographers. It was very intense, and his lawyers had to sort of block Senator Stevens and his family from the throng of people and get them into the white van. They pulled away without comment.
Libby, the jury only deliberated for less than 3 days. They had some problems early on with people getting along within the jury. Did you get the sense today that things would move quickly?
Well, we had an indication at the end of the court day on Thursday when the jury sent a note up saying we've reviewed all the evidence and we unanimously decide we should go home for the day a little bit early. And even though that was sort of a tongue-in-cheek, you know, a little bit of juror humor, it did indicate that they were working together, finally being productive, and they had gone through the evidence. So we thought that once this new juror, the alternate, came on the panel, it could move quickly, although honestly, we didn't think it would happen this quickly just because of that new person on the panel. Of course, what the jury is perhaps unaware of was that every day it took them to deliberate was another day it pushed back Senator Stevens' ability to get back to Alaska and campaign. Although, of course, that's something the jury couldn't consider at all. It was certainly in the minds of the rest of us.
And what are you hearing about what Senator Stevens will do now? His name still appears on the ballot next week. You can be convicted and still run for office. What does this mean for next week's election?
That's right, Lori. Well, Senator Stevens, even though he wouldn't comment to reporters outside the courthouse, he did put out a statement a couple hours after the verdict saying he plans to fight. He plans to return to Alaska and begin campaigning in the state on Wednesday. We assume he will appear on a public television debate on Thursday and hit as many places as he can before next Tuesday's election. His name will still be on the ballot, as you mentioned. So everything still goes forward, and he will have an opportunity to appeal this in a couple months' time. Sentencing has not been set yet until at least February. So we'll just have to see what happens over the next week.
All right, Libby, thanks for that update.
Thanks a lot, Lori.
APRN's Libby Casey reporting from Washington, D.C. The other three candidates vying to be part of Alaska's congressional delegation in Washington, D.C., all responded publicly to the news of Senator Stevens' conviction. Stevens' opponent for the U.S. Senate, Mark Begich, gave a measured, prepared response.
Okay, again, my statement's going to be very short. First, Alaskans, this has been a very difficult year for Alaskans and a long year. Alaskans are strong and resilient, and I believe Alaskans will move forward because we have many critical issues and challenges ahead of us to deal with. That's it.
Congressman Don Young said he thought the trial was not fairly handled and that it was too early to count Stevens out.
Well, yeah, I'm disappointed, and I think it would be appealed, and I probably think he will win. You have to understand that this was not a jury of his peers. It was in Washington, D.C., which most people in Washington, D.C. don't look very favorably on the Congress because we run them. And I don't know why anybody didn't bring that out. They're not a self-governing city like they say they are. We actually make decisions for them. Makes us very, very suspicious. With the jury as it was made up was not good for him. And, in fact, I think that over the conduct of the juror going to California, the conduct of the jury, you know, was asked to be excused. And then the real question comes, about the venue. And was it should have been here or out there, and that'll all be, and I'm sure he's paying enough for his lawyers, and he'll end up being vindicated in the long run, and he will win the election.
Young's opponent for Alaska's lone seat in the U.S. House of Representatives, Ethan Berkowitz, said the impact of Senator Stevens' conviction might take a while to sink in.
I think Ted Stevens is much more than one verdict, and the contributions he's made to the state have to be evaluated against everything he's done for Alaska.
Should voters stand by him?
That's a decision voters have to make on their own.
Do you think this would be a reason for someone not to vote for Ted Stevens?
That you're going to have to ask individuals. I was supporting Mark Begich, and I'm going to continue to support Mark Begich.
Governor Palin today in a written statement said that Stevens' conviction, quote, shines a light on the corrupting influence of VICO while it played an influential role in state politics, and she promised to continue her fight against the culture of corruption that got her elected in 2006. Her communications director, Bill McAllister, says that as for Senator Stevens, Governor Palin is prepared to wait for the judicial process to run its course before taking any action or passing her own judgment.
Through this whole thing, with the guilty pleas by the VICO executives, with the legislators and so forth, every time the trial has run its course, she said the same thing, that she respects and appreciates the work of the juries, and that is the case again.
Governor Palin says she is confident Senator Stevens will do what is right for the people of Alaska. The news of Stevens' conviction blazed through the chilly streets of Anchorage. APRN's Ellen Lockyer reports that reactions were mixed.
News of the Stevens conviction came at noon Alaska time. Not unexpected, but still unsettling.
Of all seven counts against him in his corruption trial, the 84-year-old Alaska Republican was found guilty of felony.
Some Alaskans reacted with dismay.
Senator Stevens has been charged on all counts.
He has?
Yeah. Did you want to tell me how you feel about that?
Oh, really sad. Yeah, I like the man. I don't think they should do anything to a man of his age and his stature in Alaska.
That's Robin Dillard. She was walking her dog when she got the word, but University of Alaska professor Rick Knecht had a harsher viewpoint.
Because I think justice was done. It was pretty clear to me that, you know, if it had been a regular guy, let's say, I could see someone falling afoul of regulations or paperwork. But he's been in the Senate for years and years. He's an attorney, trained attorney, not only that, but a prosecutor. So he certainly knew better. And so I was unimpressed by his arguments that he was innocent, and I think that obviously the jury agreed.
Over at Ted Stevens' campaign headquarters on Fireweed Lane, the reactions of staunch Republican supporters ranged from cautious, Senator Lisa Murkowski.
But we recognize that, there's more of a process that goes beyond the trial, so we'll wait and see.
To outright defiance, Margie Johnson.
I just think that's a D.C. jury passing judgment on the way we do business in Alaska, and I don't like it. It's like before statehood, having outsiders control us, and we don't want any part of that. I've stood with Senator Stevens, and he stands with us, and I'm with him all the way.
Stevens campaign spokesman McHugh Pierre.
It's incredible for me to see that the prosecution can be reprimanded and can be disciplined by the judge for having all of these loops and missteps in the trial, but then the jury just comes out and unilaterally says, well, he must be a bad guy. I'm disappointed that it's a Washington, D.C. jury. If it was Alaskans, I might have a different sense of the matter, but I don't believe these people in D.C. know our senator, represent Alaskan beliefs, and really have the best interest in mind for us.
Whether or not Stevens will appeal the verdict remains to be seen. Even though the senator was convicted by a jury in Washington, some Alaskans say it is time Stevens stepped down.
I think that Stevens is all about himself now, you know, just like that commercial says.
But he cares about the people.
No, he's worried about himself now. I mean, he just got convicted on seven felony counts. He's going to federal prison.
Yeah, he did do a lot for Alaska.
Yeah, but his time is over. His time is over, man.
It's time
to move on.
Yep.
That's what I really think.
That's Dan Stephenson and Bert Savalik. But Stephenson's son, Daniel Stephenson, took a softer view.
I say that he shouldn't have been, and he's a good man, you know. If anybody be convicted, it's his lawyers or something, you know.
Stevens will not be sentenced until late January of next year. There's no law that forces him to step down because of the conviction, and there is no rule barring him from serving in the Senate as a felon. McHugh Pierre says that if Stevens chooses to step down, a special election will be held to find a replacement senator. For APRN, I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the Coast Guard investigates last week's Katmai disaster.
I was kind of tangled underneath the raft there, and when I came back out from under the raft, there was three guys left, and that was it.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, operating and maintaining the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. And by
Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, an Alaskan company providing lifting and rigging products since 1983, on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
Citizens across the state had wide-ranging opinions about Stevens' conviction. Kodiak resident Jessica Wolf was having lunch when she heard the news. She says she voted early in this year's election and doesn't regret casting a vote for Senator Stevens. Wolf says Stevens was the only Republican she voted for, but she decided to back him because he's done so much for Alaska, and she doesn't think the charges against him were all that serious.
In the whole scheme of things, no, I don't think it was. I'm a registered independent, so, you know, just the fact that I voted Democrat doesn't mean anything particularly. I voted for who I wanted to. So, you know, but $250,000 over a lifetime is nothing. I figure they're stealing that much and more every day in Washington.
Also from Kodiak, Rhonda Maker has been a vocal critic of Stevens' involvement in fisheries issues. A commercial fisherman for more than 20 years, Maker now owns two stores in Kodiak. She says the guilty verdict reaffirms her belief that Stevens' influence on the fishing industry needs investigating.
I think that we can seriously look at some very unusual turns of events, especially regarding fisheries issues and fisheries management. We can see now that maybe he didn't have the country's best interests at heart.
Maker mentioned specifically the privatization of a number of fisheries, including halibut and the Bering Sea crab fisheries, made famous by the TV show Deadliest Catch. Joel Southern worked as a Washington, D.C.-based political reporter for the Alaska Public Radio Network for 20 years. Southern now lives in Denmark, but he joins us to offer some perspective on the Stevens conviction. Stevens released a statement this afternoon saying he is innocent, and he said that the prosecution handled the trial in an unconscionable manner. Joel, Senator Stevens, as you know, is running for re-election. If he should win, what could potentially happen in the Senate as a result and a response to the conviction?
Just because you're convicted, if you're a senator, doesn't mean that you're automatically ineligible to remain in the Senate. You can remain there. However, you can be brought before the Senate Ethics Committee, and they can look at your conduct and decide to punish you in some way. And the worst sort of punishment would be expulsion from the Senate.
I understand there is precedent for this, Joel. New Jersey Senator Harrison Williams was convicted of accepting bribes in 1980. What happened in that case?
Harrison Williams' conviction was due to the FBI's ABSCAM sting operation. And so he was convicted, and the issue went before the Senate Ethics Committee, which ultimately recommended that Williams be expelled because of what they called ethically repugnant conduct. However, before the Senate could get around to taking a vote on actually kicking him out, he resigned. And he went on to serve, you know, time in prison after that. But he instead of, you know, forcing the Senate to kick him out, he left on his own.
Beyond any Senate action, Joel, what else could possibly come into play that might salvage his political career?
Salvage his political career is, you know, a big question. I mean, it might come down to salvaging his reputation. I mean, certainly if they go to the extent of appealing this conviction, and it sounds like they're headed down that road, you know, there's always the possibility of an appeal overturning the conviction. I guess I've been sort of thinking out loud if this might be also a situation where a presidential pardon might come into play. Say the conviction stands, President Bush will be leaving office on January 20th. It's customary at the end of presidential administrations for a number of pardons to be offered. And you have to wonder, given Stevens' public service in a lot of areas, such as defense issues, many other things in U.S. government, and in fact, he knows President Bush, he knows President Bush's father, former President George Herbert Walker Bush. You got to wonder if that might be a scenario out there where a presidential pardon might come into play.
Joel, I realize you're a long way from Alaska or Washington for that matter, but I know that you followed the trial quite closely. What do you think was the most damaging?
Well, when you go back and look at what was written about this trial and the testimony, it does seem that, you know, the amount of work that was done on the Girdwood residence, the cost that the Stevens paid relative to the amount of work done, and all this back and forth about what constituted a gift versus a loan, and if it was a loan of some sort of article or item, I mean, why did it stay in their residence for so long? You've got to think that the jurors must have been persuaded by that. I mean, I haven't seen what the jurors said was the most compelling evidence, but, you know, I'm not so sure that, from what I can tell, that Senator Stevens actually helped himself by testifying in his own behalf at the trial. So I think that's probably some of the issues that weighed in the minds of the jurors.
Joel Southern is a former APRN Washington, D.C. correspondent, now living in Denmark.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
the Alaska Community Foundation, encouraging listeners to tune into AK every weekend. Your local public radio station has airtimes. The strongest voices in the community, business, and government can be heard each Tuesday on APRN's Talk of Alaska. Get your message out by becoming an APRN program sponsor. Details at 907-550-8439.
Today, a Marine Board of Investigation began interviewing the four men who survived last week's sinking of the fishing vessel Katmai in the Aleutians. Seven crew members were lost. Five bodies were recovered. The cause of the sinking is not clear. APRN's Steve Heimel reports.
The Katmai's captain, Henry Blake III, told the board their chief engineer thought he had the problem under control right up until they abandoned ship. It was foul weather with snow and rain blowing at 80 knots. And the steering was gone, apparently because the controls were flooded due to an open lazarette in the back part of the boat. The stern of the Katmai was a bad place to be in that kind of weather, frequently awash in the waves. But the engineer, Bob Davis, got to the lazarette, shut it, and reported he was pumping it out. He then reported there was water below, in the engine room, but not that much. Up at the helm, Blake was seeing the bilge alarm going off. Within 15 minutes, it was clear it was time to get off the boat. The crew put its survival suits on and began getting the Katmai's two life rafts ready. Bob Davis, Blake said, will never get to tell his story.
The last thing I said to Bob, he was headed back down to the engine room. I said, Bob, suit up. He gave me the one-minute signal, and
went down in the engine room. We had a suit pulled out for him in the house, but I don't know if he ever got it on.
The boat was listing increasingly to the port, her left side. Blake said it acted as if it still wanted to right itself. Then it veered to port and the engines kicked in. It rolled over to the other side and continued to roll. It was going down. Blake says there was no way that the amount of water in the flooded lazarette could have flooded the engine room to that degree, and he's still trying to figure out how so much water got into the Katmai.
Yesterday morning, I spent some time with Mike and Marty just going over the diagrams to try and understand how it went from water in the lazarette to the engine room and that kind of volume in that amount of time. And I mean, there's the watertight bulkheads and the doors. There's the door to the factory. There's the door between the factory and the engine room. I had reports that all of them were secured.
Blake remembers deploying one of the life rafts with six other crew members. He's not sure if the rest of the crew was successful in getting the other one deployed. He does know that one of the crew members in his life raft, Josh Leon Guerrero, ripped a hole in a survival suit and later was lost when the waves rolled the life raft.
The raft was full of water all the way. And then a big one came, and it rolled the raft several times. We'd taken some big ones before that, but it would fold the raft up and maybe bump you into some other guys and all that. But then a big one came, and it rolled the raft several times. And when I came, I was kind of tangled underneath the raft there, and when I came back out from under the raft, there was three guys left, and that was it. And we had nothing. There was no canopy. There was no survival equipment. Josh was gone. Cedric was gone.
Blake's memory is hazy about what became of another crew member, Carlos Zabala, but the raft rolled numerous times as they waited the 18 hours until they were rescued. Zabala, along with Bob Davis, is still missing. Found dead were Leon Guerrero, Cedric Smith, Jake Gilman, and Glenn Harper. Still to tell their stories to the board, along with Smith, are Adam Foster, Guy Schroeder, and Harold Appling. In Anchorage, I'm Steve Heimel.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at aprn.org. You can also comment on the show at aprn.org. We had reports tonight from Len Anderson in Anchorage and Casey Kelly in Kodiak. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., Steve Heimel and Ellen Lockyer from Anchorage, and Dave Donaldson from Juneau. Our audio engineers are Gooseberry Peter and Dave Waldron. John Prophet is our webmaster. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the Rasmussen Foundation, partnering with Alaska's nonprofits and people to improve the quality of life throughout our state. The Division of Elections reminds voters that Tuesday, November 4th, is Election Day. Polling places will be open from 7 a.m. until 8 p.m. To find your polling place, call 1-888-383-8683. If you need language or other assistance while voting, you may ask the election board or bring a person of your choice to assist you. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska Division of Elections. Didn't quite catch that report? Want to hear it again? APRN can be heard on the web at www.aprn.org.
APRN will be providing special coverage of the 50th anniversary of Alaska statehood. For sponsorship information, call 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.